Welcome to Healing Your Families, where we address six areas of health: emotional, financial, mental, physical, social, and spiritual. And we're just concluding a series of episodes emphasizing emotional well-being. We've talked about how, as we become more aware of our emotions and recognizing that they're not good or bad, they're just energy. And that energy, like any other energy, can be transferred from one form to another and used to help us reach our goals. We can actually learn more about ourselves and what needs to change, how we can improve and make our life better. So how much more effective to be able to teach this to our children? How much better prepared will they be for life if they're learning how to soothe themselves, how to put down, to subdue those feelings of anxiety or angst? So let's go. I want to present some material. It came from this book, Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child by Dr. John Gottman. And in this book, he outlines five steps that parents can take to serve as an emotion coach for their child to help them navigate this mysterious territory of their emotions. As you raise children, you teach them many life skills. Why not teach them the important skill of managing their emotions so that they serve them? They're in control of their emotions. Now, we need to understand that it begins with us. We can't teach our children to be confident if we're not confident. We can't teach them to do something that we're not already doing. So let's take a look at your relationship with your emotions. Are you able to accept them and learn from them? Are there any emotions you try to repress? Do you ever feel a danger of losing control? In his book, Dr. Gottman talks about one mother who was raised by alcoholics and is quite often the case, suffered from low self-esteem, and she struggled between two extremes, being that martyr mother, just always kind. And then when she couldn't stifle down her emotions anymore, they erupted and she lashed out at her children and she became angry, resentful. And she expressed that she knew her tantrums affected her children, that they hurt them, but she didn't know how to stop them. She felt like she had two switches, nice and mean, and she didn't know how to control that switch. So if you can identify with that, it's important that you begin by making sure you know how to manage your emotions. In fact, these five steps will help you, but the best advantage for your children will be to be raised by an emotionally intelligent parent, a parent who has learned how to use this powerful emotion, power of emotions. So the first step is to be aware of your child's emotion. And this may seem like, well, this is obvious. Their emotions are there. How can you miss them? But if we're not that aware of our own emotions, we may not recognize them in our children. And let's face it, we have many, many calls on our attention. It's easy to become distracted, and maybe we don't recognize it until the emotion is at full outburst. So step one, be aware of your child's emotions. Be aware they have emotions. They're not good or bad. They're just energy. And recognize when an emotion is coming up that will need some help and support. And that leads us to the second step. know that this emotion is an opportunity. Change that mind shift. Quite often, when our children start to have an emotional outburst, we view it with dismay, especially if it happens in public. We try to stop them. Don't do that. Be quiet. Stop crying. Or mollify or distract them. But this is a teaching moment. There is no time when your child will need you more than when they're angry or sad or afraid. In fact, being able to soothe an upset child makes you feel more like a parent than anything else. It brings out the nurturing side. So recognize when that emotion comes up, it's time to put on your coach hat. This is an opportunity. This is going to allow you to become closer to your child, to strengthen that relationship, and to guide them through. So recognize that anytime there is that emotion, it's an opportunity. Lean into it. And how do you lean into it? What do? You're going to listen attentively. Listen very carefully. This is active listening. Validate their feelings. Now, active listening means that you're not doing anything else. Your focus is entirely on them. You're watching them and you're asking questions to make sure you understand. You're communicating that you want, that you accept them. You're using curiosity, not judgment or criticism, but you want to understand and you want to let them know the feeling is okay. The feeling is not, the emotion is not the problem. The behavior is a problem. If your child comes home from school and they slam the door and they throw their book bag at their little brother, and they kick the dog. Obviously, that's not okay. That behavior needs to be addressed. But the emotion is not the same as the behavior. The emotion is what they're feeling. They're feeling upset. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, they can learn from that feeling. Is there something they need to change to help tomorrow go a little more smoothly? The behavior needs to be addressed. It's okay to say things like, I know you're angry, but it's not okay to throw your backpack at your brother. It's not okay to hit people. And we help them accept and understand their emotions and modify their behavior. Emotions are not the problem, it's the behavior that needs to be addressed. And as you listen to them and validate their feelings, you help them to manage those feelings. For example, take the example of William, an 8-year-old boy. He went outside to play with some of the neighbors, and they didn't want to play with him. And he came in the house and was very dejected. And his father just glances over the newspaper and says, "What's wrong?" And he, "Well, they won't play with me." And the father says, "Not again. Oh, come on. You're 8 years old. You're not a baby anymore. Just go find something else to do. Don't sulk." Now, compare the second possibility. William comes in. He's dejected. Dad asks him, "What's going on?" He explains, "They won't play with me. I really wanted to play basketball with me, and they won't play with me." And his father says, "It sounds like that hurt your feelings." And he said, "Yes, it really did." And his dad said, "Did you talk to them about it?" And William says, "No, I don't want to do that." And his dad says, "What do you want to do?" And William says, "You know, maybe they'll want to play with me tomorrow. Right now, I think I'll go watch some TV. I'll go do something else." Now, think of the difference of the impact on William. In the first case, children accept our opinion And William could buy into that label of being a baby. You know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just shrug it off like Dad said? And he may feel guilty about experiencing those feelings and being upset. In the second one, he's understood. Dad has said nothing wrong with that feeling, and he's encouraged him to find something to do. William probably feels more confident, more empowered, because he solved the problem himself. So we begin by listening empathetically, actively, not doing anything else, focusing on them to understand and help them accept their feelings. Then after that, you need to help them label their emotions. Another example is Kyle. Kyle's little 4-year-old brother had a birthday and got a package in the mail from grandma. There was no package in the mail for Kyle. And Kyle said, "That's not fair." Now, his parents could have just explained, "Well, it's not your birthday. Just wait till it's your birthday and then you'll get a package from grandma." But they chose to validate. "You seem upset." And Kyle said, "It's not fair. He got a package and I didn't." And they say, "That may have you feel that it sounds like that made you feel kind of jealous." Now Kyle has a label. Now he knows what he's feeling. It's jealous. A lot of times we think if our child has a negative emotion, I should just ignore it and then he'll stop doing it. But that doesn't help the feeling go away. Allowing the child to talk about it and put a label on it and to know this is what it is, this is what I'm experiencing, actually soothes the central nervous system and allows them to recover much more quickly from that upset. So help them verbally label their emotions, help them understand them. Then they know what to do with them. The last step is just setting limits. The emotion is not the problem, but the behavior. The behavior needs limits. And while you're helping them problem solve, like the example with the coming home from school all upset, it's okay to be upset. But there need to be limits on the behavior. We can't hurt other people. What can we do with that anger? What are some ways we could make tomorrow go more smoothly? Now, depending on the age of the child, you could brainstorm with them. You might even make a few suggestions. Invite them to decide what they want to do. You won't teach your children how to clean if you clean their room for them, but you would take them through a process of a guided practice. You're doing it with them, teaching them the skills, then stepping back and letting them do more on their own. Think of any skill you teach your children. It's the same process. Maybe to begin with, you brush your baby's teeth, and then you put the toothpaste on the toothbrush and hand it to them and let them and give them some instructions with what they should do with the toothbrush. Eventually, they're brushing their teeth by themselves. And the same thing with the emotion coaching. We're providing help, guidance, and support at first, learning to understand their emotions, to know what to do with them, to learn from them, and then to problem solve. So it's not an issue anymore. So here are all five steps again. And as you're viewing these, remember that each family has their own structure. The absolute worst, most damaging atmosphere for a child is one of chaos, when they don't know what's going to happen next. They don't know what's expected of them. A behavior is fine one day, and the next day they'd be severely punished for it. So we set up guidelines. Some families like to talk about the behavior zones. There's the green zone, and these are the behaviors that are desired. You're welcome anytime you want. Take your dishes and put them in the dishwasher after you're finished. Speak kindly to your siblings. Help out around the house. This is the green zone. You're going to be very welcome behavior. The yellow zone could be behavior that's not sanctioned, but it's tolerated for one of two reasons. Either there's the leeway because they're just learning. For example, the four-year-old who hasn't learned how to sit quietly during a church service, the behavior isn't sanctioned, but it's tolerated because he's little, he's still learning. There's also leeway given for hard times. A child is going through a traumatic time. Maybe there's unemployment, they're moving, something, they've lost a loved one. There's some crisis in the family. And we let them know this, you're going through a hard time. We will tolerate this. And then there's the red zone. And these are those behaviors that are not acceptable, no matter what. They could be things like we don't hit each other, anything that's dangerous to self or others, anything that's illegal or immoral. And as they are evaluating their possible solutions to their problems, they're using those family values, that guideline, that structure within the family. As you begin when your children are young, and there's a real advantage if they can learn these skills when they're young and learn how to soothe themselves and how to remain calm under stress, you start earning their trust. You build a rapport with them so that as they enter the teen years, they trust you. They see you as a mentor, and they understand that you have their best interest at heart, and they're more open to listen to your ideas as you talk about the family vet. For example, if a teen came home and said, "School is rough, I hate it, I can't see any value, I just want to drop out, I don't want to graduate high school." And if think of two possible responses that you could make. One might be something along the lines of, "No one in our family has ever dropped out of high school." Another one might be, "Well, let's view some options, let's examine some options and see what's best for you." Can you feel the difference? The first one indicates that your concern about what other people think is more important to you than your child's feelings. The second one would reinforce that you have their best interest at heart. You want to help them find the solution. And remember, teens can't always see into, down the road. They're not always looking at the long-term consequences. But they're more likely to listen to your input on and explaining those long-term consequences when they are convinced that you care about them and are most interested in what is best for them. Now, children learn from your example. They are always watching you. When they're little, they want to be like you, they want to do what you're doing. So understand that the best way to be an effective emotion coach is to become an emotionally intelligent person. Manage your emotions. Show them how emotions can be used to motivate and reach goals. to be more empathetic and understand other people and get along with them better. Do that. Become that. Know that your example is the most powerful teacher your children have. So, love your children, love yourself. Let's make the world a better place by strengthening families. This is Emmalou Penrod with healingyourfamilies.com.